Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Beth Pierce. Beth has been a realtor for more than 35 years and is the broker owner of Primetime Properties in Century City, California. And she's currently the vice president for the National Association of Realtors. She was elected honorary director for life in 2006 and realtor of the year from California in 2012. And she comes from a background where her family was in real estate as well. Beth, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Bruce.
We talked a little bit off air about your mom, and she was also kind of an all-star in what she did. And that was in New Jersey. And go ahead, Beth.
That's correct. She was in New Jersey. She was a realtor of the year in New Jersey back quite a while ago.
What's interesting about real estate, and, you know, it's kind of changed my life, and, you know, because I got involved in ownership of real estate, I always get frustrated when I read articles about, you know, people saying, well, I'll never own a house. I just saw a big article in one of the LA papers about how smart it is never to own something. I really shake my head because it's really been a very big benefit to me. But real estate kind of did change in the 70s, you know, when just about in the mid 70s, all of a sudden it became more than a residence. It became an investment in people's minds as well. When your mom was selling real estate, was it more for just the purposes of to live in?
It was definitely for purposes of to live in. It was for shelter. You know, it was, I don't want to pay somebody else rent every month. I want to own my own home. And people in those days, the object was to pay off your mortgage. That was considered everyone's goal. I remember mortgage burning parties
exactly.
In my neighborhood. So, yeah, it was quite a different thing then. We still say the same thing. We still say, if you're going to live in the home, buy the home you want to live in. Don't buy it because you think, oh, 5 years from now it'll be worth so much more money. That may very well be true, but you're going to live there. Buy something you want to be in.
You know, I think people, and whenever I speak in front of realtor groups, I always remind them how important their job is, because it was a big deal for me to become a homeowner for the first time. I've owned a lot of homes since then. I'm an investor, and I buy and sell a lot of homes. But the reason you own a home is usually doesn't have anything to do with the numbers. It has to do with you get to call your own shots inside of that 70 by 100 lot.
Right.
And that means you can paint it, and you can have a dog, you know, you can have kids or whatever. And people forget that that is really kind of the basic right and the privilege of being an American and why people come here.
Absolutely. We get, especially in the area I live in, because it's part of Los Angeles, we get tremendous amount of foreign buyers. And the buyers all say the same thing. They want to raise their kids in a house. They want their grandchildren to be able to play in the pool or whatever it may be. And they want their own part of America. And the more immigrants we get in, they all say the same thing. They want a part of America. They don't want to own a piece.
Yes. And from what you're saying, it seems like they appreciate that privilege maybe more than if it's always been there for us.
Right. That's very possible.
In the area that you're in, you know, when you have Beverly Hills attached to, you know, the area you work, the assumption is that there's just everything's multi-million dollars. And is that kind of the inventory that you deal with?
In Beverly Hills, certainly it's a much higher price range than most areas of the world. But, well, not the world. I shouldn't include Tokyo or London or New York in that. But it is a very expensive area. In Century City, however, it's much closer to the average norm in California, where you can still get that two-bedroom, two-bath condo or a small home in the what we call the suburbs. And it's still a much more affordable area. And certainly there are areas of Beverly Hills that are much more affordable, too. We think of it as, you know, it only has the most expensive real estate, but there are also areas that are buyable in, as I call them.
Okay. FHA won't be doing loans in there anytime
lot.
Soon.
No, no. You're not going to get a lot of FHA. Now, I will admit that.
Okay. Do you get the sense now you wear multiple hats? Now I'm calling you in at your office, I think, in LA today.
Right.
But Washington DC, they have a lot to do with how real estate does. So in the 2000s, in the early 2000s, it was really the housing industry was probably backed by policy to too great of an extent. And now with Dodd-Frank and so forth, you know, the unwinding of that, do you get the sense that at the end of the day, that homeownership will still have a very special place in the hearts of the lawmakers and that they will want to encourage that instead of discourage it?
Well, I think they will, if for no other reason than a very practical one, and that is that real estate is a very vital part of how our economy goes. When the real estate market goes down, the nation's economy goes down. So you need the financial well-being of all the Americans and their families to be able to live in the homes they choose to live in. And the tax provisions and the mortgage interest deductions and capital gains exclusions, all those things make a tremendous difference as to whether people can afford to buy a home, as well as interest rates. So I certainly hope that Congress will take all those things into consideration when they're making some of the new laws.
There's definitely a sense that we're going to have to save money. We're going to have to decrease spending and increase taxes. And real estate certainly seems to be one of the prime targets that they could take some goodies from. So maybe let's talk about some of the things that are being discussed and the odds of them sticking around. I read some of the legislation at the site at National Association of Realtors. So I really didn't realize 1031 exchanges were under fire.
Everything's under fire.
Everything's under
fire. Bruce. So and from everything from your property tax deductions to your mortgage interest deductions to 1031 exchanges, they say they're looking at everything. But we're very hopeful and we're lobbying very hard that they will understand that they can do far more damage than the good they're trying to do.
You know, I guess that's the thing, is that you try to balance. And if you really discourage people that are entrepreneurial and that bought things with a certain set of rules in place, and then you change the rules after the fact, that gets frustrating. It's one thing to know all the rules and up front and say, I'm going to participate. It's another thing to own something and then go, well, wait a minute.
We're going to count on people like you running radio shows like you do to keep the public informed and keep our lawmakers honest. So,
well, one of the most discouraging statements I honestly ever heard on the radio show was I was talking with an economist that was very well known, and I like him, but it was a comment specifically about Prop 13, and I said, well, one of the problems with playing with Prop 13 is you have people that are seniors that have lived in homes in locations that have gone up extremely a lot, and they never moved, they just live there. And if you change Prop 13, there's a good chance they won't even be able to afford their property tax. And he said, well, that's why they have reverse mortgages. And I thought, wow.
That's an interesting statement.
Yeah, on the radio, too. And I thought, that's not very...
I'll guarantee you it isn't his parents who are living in that home.
You know, that's. But you know what's interesting is that's the thing about some of the decisions that, you know, we know we have to deal with. We all have people in our lives that are in those situations, and that's kind of, I guess that's what we have to do is look out. We do have to look out for people when they got into the situation, the rules were this, and if they change drastically enough where they can't even live there, maybe we ought to take a look at that rule change, really. Sale, one rule that's in place actually surprised me. There was a gentleman I knew named Robert Bruss at the time, and he was just a very smart man who had a real estate column. And he's an attorney and an investor. And when the rule came out in 2003 that you could sell your residence every 2 years and make $500,000 if you were a married couple, I didn't even believe what I was seeing. And I called him up. I said, I'm probably reading this wrong. He says, no, that's there.
That's there.
And it's still there.
And it is still there. The average family really does not make more than $500,000 on their property once they start subtracting out what it costs them to buy it, what they've put into it. Especially in California, and I really can only speak for California in this case, Californians tend to do things to their homes to make them nicer to live in, to make them more of what they want for a family home. And when you start subtracting out those things, I'm not even sure that that exclusion is used nearly as much as we seem to think it is. Because, you know, you have a number of costs of buying the home, and you have a number of costs when you sell the home, and then anything you've done in that home to improve it, it's a physical improvement. I'm not talking about painting, but, you know, did you put in a pool? Did you remodel a bathroom? How about that new section you put in the kitchen? That kind of thing. We get to write those off, add those to the cost of the house anyway. So while the rule sounds terrific, and believe me, I certainly don't want it to go away, I'm not sure we use it nearly as much as, I don't think they'd make very much more money on our taxes if it were not there. So I...
What's the one thing they're eyeing that would make them a lot more revenue?
I can't answer that. I have to tell you. They're eyeing everything. To get rid of mortgage interest deduction, you know, a number of years ago they limited it to $1 million, and most people understood that. There weren't a lot of homes where people had loans over $1 million on it.
Right.
But now some of the people are talking about taking it away. Some of the people are saying, well, bring it down to $500,000. But in my state, in Georgia, wherever they may be, we don't have homes over $500,000. Well, in California, you don't have to be rich to have a mortgage over $500,000. You know,
right.
It just depends on the area you're living in.
Sure.
So, you know, it's all a very relative number. So we're, excuse me, we're hoping to keep it. And to keep the mortgage deduction the way it is, but we'll have to see what comes out of Congress.
I guess when you're dealing with a negotiation, which is sort of what this is that you have things that are like the third rail, the holy grail of, you know, don't touch that. And that would seem to be, interest rate deduction would
exactly.
be in that category. But maybe some of the goodies, you know, are going to have to be sacrificed for the Holy Grail section. And that'll be interesting to see, you know, how this plays out. But do you think, like, a Prop 13 in California, is that under threat?
Well, that would only come within our own state because, as you know,
exactly.
it's a state rule rather than a federal. I would doubt with our legislature being of the makeup it is right now that would come in, although every few years it certainly comes up when we're bankrupt or when we don't have enough money for education or transportation or whatever it is. Certainly that does come up. I certainly won't say it doesn't, but
right.
We're hopeful that it'll stay the way it is. They talk about split roll, whether or not it should apply to commercial properties as well as residential properties. Things like that come up on a more frequent basis.
Right, or a rental versus
right.
occupancy, that
right.
type of thing. Okay. How's the real estate business doing in general as far as the volume of sales, for one?
Well, it had a tremendous increase in 2014 and 13, and we're expecting to see that same uptrend in 14. We've had a 20% cumulative increase over the last 2 years, and prices have gone up 18%. The problem with that is that income has only risen around 3%, so that does make it more difficult right now. We don't have our affordability index at the same place where we did a couple of years ago. You know, the lower the interest rates, the easier it is to buy. And we're certainly, we do think that this is still the best, they said in the past 40 years, this is the fifth best year we've had in the past 40 years for affordability to buy a home. And that's the good news.
Well, and I'm, boy, am I really attached to that affordability index. And I look at it almost in reverse of most people, because it's interesting when affordability goes down, and it has gone down from ridiculous levels to where we're at, what you just said is true. Okay, so it went down, big deal. You're still more affordable now than almost at any time in my lifetime.
Right, and that's something very important for people to realize, that if they're interested in owning a home, this is the time to go out and buy one, because interest rates are still at an all-time low. I came into the business when interest rates were going up to 19%. So for me, this is like, okay, come on, guys. Don't tell me you're complaining because it's 4.75 or 5.5.
I see those, the advertisement or the news articles in the paper, and it says, you know, interest rates soar to 4.5, and you go, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, if someone had told you 10 years ago that you would be able to get a 4.5% interest rate, you would have looked at him and laughed and said, lead me to it.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, that's like bragging rights for the next 30 years.
Exactly. And you can get a good fixed rate mortgage. It's not one of those funny, you know, gee, what will happen in 2 years? Oh, yeah, it's going to go to 23%.
Exactly.
It's not like that.
No.
You can get a good government fixed rate mortgage, and it's terrific.
Well, when you say you have high affordability, the equal to that is that owning a home is taking less of your income, and you have just fixed that to be true. So you're now saying for the next 30 years, as your income progresses, your housing costs are not only fixed, they'll be declining in ratio to what you make. That's a very big deal for household wealth.
You know, you are the kind of salesman I always wanted to hire. You are absolutely right. That's what makes housing such a wonderful thing to have in our country, and especially in California.
You know, that's the thing. I really don't understand. Well, even Robert Shiller, and I've tried to interview him a couple of times, is very against home ownership, even though he owns two of them.
Yeah.
But the math he thinks he can prove that's detrimental. And for me, I kind of got, when I first bought a home, it was in the mid-70s. It was a fortunate time in the sense that they went up. And I remember making $10,000 on the sale of my house. And it was all I made in a year at that time. And I remember thinking, holy mackerel, what would happen if I owned two or three of these? And I did that, and it went up some more. And so it took me 4 years to own a really pretty cool home free and clear because I had bought more than one. And so it's interesting that my personal experience and the reason that I've been able to gain some wealth is really directly attached to real estate. And unfortunately, it does go up and down, and some of those cycles can hurt you. But in general, owning a house, I just can't say that you'd ever talk me into willingly being a renter, because I know that my housing cost is directly attached to the whim of somebody else.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that there aren't people who should be renting until they are able to save enough to buy and to know that they can afford all their housing payments, their taxes and their insurance and their mortgage. Absolutely. You've got to know that you can afford that. But once you know you can, it's not going to change. At this point with Proposition 13, you know what your property taxes are going to be. Yeah, insurance is a variable, but they're trying to keep those under control. And you know what your mortgage is if you get a 30-year fix. And you can't ask for a better situation than that, as far as I'm concerned.
And, you know, again, just doing some math, and I'm really not trying to, you know, I'm not a salesman in the sense that I just, what it's done for me personally, when you have the ratio of debt, they talk about 43%, okay? So 43% of your income can go to real estate debt, or your overall debt. A big chunk of that is real estate. And when you end up owning that free and clear, it's almost like you have financial freedom.
Exactly. And that's what our seniors all used to strive for, was to get to the point where they were free and clear of that payment, and then they could live on their Social Security or whatever they had put aside to live on for the rest of their lives. And that's when you talked about Prop 13 and how it could affect people if it were gone, that kind of thing. We know that that's one of the reasons why it's there.
I get asked all the time, because I'm an investor, you know, people come up and say, okay, so should I refi my, you know, free and clear house to do this? And I was like, I wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't. I said, be honest with you, you sleep so well at night because of that. You know, there's other ways to do it. I think that's sort of almost the holy grail of financial stability is whatever happens wrong outside, if you can go to a house that's free and clear when you sleep at night, there's something special about that in my heart. There really is.
I can understand that.
You know, we have a better real estate market, but new home construction is still not too exciting yet, the numbers. So what is standing in the way of a true recovery?
That's a great question, Bruce, and I'm not sure I'm the person to answer it. I think people are still nervous. I do think that people say, well, but look what happened. And the banks are saying that, the government is saying that, and, for instance, the new QRM, they're proposing is saying that you have to have a much larger down payment. They're not going with the same rules that they have for their qualified mortgages. So they're not encouraging the buying of real estate as far as I'm concerned. And I do think that if our government were to think about what happens to the economy when people are not invested in real estate, they would change some of the things they're doing.
Well, in Riverside County, just, you know, real estate is usually a big piece of our economy because of building, because we have land.
Right.
And construction, and these are the dangerous things about charts. You could say construction is up 40% from last year, and that would be an accurate statement. And in the same time, it's down 80% from where it was. But the significant thing for Riverside County is lot creation is down 95% still. So that's kind of what you're saying is that there are some encouraging signs, but the most encouraging sign would be a builder saying, I'm going to write a check for a piece of land and develop lots because I see a clear future and a clear path to profit. And you don't see that reaction in the marketplace. Riverside County, in a county that normally has 300 to 350 subdivisions, we had 23 in 2013.
Wow. And that's down.
Yeah, and it's been bouncing there for the last 5 or 6 years. Now, I could understand that being done in 2010, but after you could sell every new house you could possibly build in 2013, you would think during 2013 somebody would write a check for some dirt, and it didn't happen.
And part of that may be some of your government regulations that are out there now in your building permits, etc. I don't know. I'm not... I have many friends who are realtors out there, and I could ask them and get some real information for you. But well, it's just nobody's really sure why the builders aren't jumping in at this moment, because the land is still reasonable. It's time to get back in the market because, as you say, people will snap up those new homes instantly.
Yeah, there's always that I'd like to have a new one and even pay a premium for it.
Right.
In the next segment, we're fortunate we have you for two segments. We're really going to concentrate on some of the rule changes, the Dodd-Frank and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and their purpose. One thing that's I do want to start the segment with Fannie and Freddie, because it's an interesting thing as I've been watching the news over the last several months. You know, this has turned into a very profitable business.
Yes, it has.
So it's about time to end it.
Well, welcome to our government. Well, that's true. And we strongly support restructuring the secondary mortgage market, but we will not support any entity that does not have a clear and explicit government guarantee, because that's what ensures the availability of affordable mortgage credit. And unless we have affordable mortgages, no one can afford to buy a house, or very few of us.
It's just an interesting thing when you get the government involved. Of course, they've always been involved in Fannie and Freddie, kind of in a backup guarantee position. Now they happen to own them, and so it creates another level of involvement. Beth, I've really enjoyed talking with you. I've been talking with Beth Pierce, the National Association of Realtors Vice President, and we will join her again in another segment.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.